Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from Atlantic State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host and producer. Joining me this week are two sports writers who have not let bruises, cuts, and injuries hold them back this fall. It's Detroit Free Press beat writer Chris Solari and Atlantic State Journal sports columnist Graham Couch. Chris, let me start with you. How are you doing on this beautiful Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, I'm bruised, I'm caught up, and plugging along.
That's all we can ask for you entering Ohio State week. Graham, how about you?
Hey, you know what? Yeah, I can tell you how Graham's doing. He's sore, and he'll be ready when he's ready.
All right. Graham, agree, disagree?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to share details of injuries, but I'm doing all right. My turf toe is healing, and we're getting back at it.
We're all just battling injuries of sorts, whether it's just weather change illnesses and allergies or turf toe or whatever. Everything that Jane Reed's going through is just that's ruining falls for all of us, I guess, is one way to put it. And I guess we can start there this week. Of course, like I mentioned, it is Ohio State week for the Spartans, who are coming off another tough performance and losing at Maryland last week. And then I know everybody got to kind of talk to Jane Reed this week, or at least write about him. And I think we've always known that his, you know, lack of production and lack of being able to be on the field has hurt the Spartans this year. But I mean, the Maryland game was just another situation where that was exacerbated quite a bit. And now that we kind of know a better extent of what's going on with them, does that make things better or worse? Or what do you guys think about Jane Reed's status, you know, for the Ohio State game and for the rest of the season, quite frankly?
Quite honestly, it is what it is. I mean, you know, he was banged up during camp. Caden Hauser kind of let that out of the bag a little bit, but we knew from ducking into practice a little bit that we got a chance to see that he was sometimes not there. And he mentioned about being in a boot, and I'd heard previously that it was a foot injury. And, you know, you those early games, you don't really need him. But then the first game, you know, he's back on the field playing, and he takes a hard fall against Western. And, you know, that took him out of the end of that first half, and then when he came back in the second half, he wasn't returning kickoffs. Then the Akron game happens, and, you know, he's back on the field again and makes a leap for a grab and lands on that same hip that he injured the week before, only this time he doesn't stick in the turf. He just keeps going into a bench and gets a deep cut. And hearing about that cut and, the things that he needed to do, I mean, it's such a weird injury. You know, and enough of an issue that Michigan State wrapped the benches, the corners of the benches, the following week, or when they did get back, I should say. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he even last week at Maryland, there were points towards the end of the game where he didn't look like he was running his routes as crisp and as hard. I mean, there were some redirects that Peyton Thorne was trying to do when he got flushed from the pocket and send Reed downfield, and Reed was just kind of more or less playing a traffic cone to try and keep a defender away, and Thorne ran out of bounds. Some of those things that might not have shown up on the video on the TV, but certainly were visible during the game. And, you know, Graham, I think you mentioned this after the game. He doesn't look like he's running remotely close to 100% right now.
No, he doesn't look like the same guy, not quite the same burst. There was one move against Maryland where I thought he looked okay. You know, I mean, obviously he's Jaden Reed. He's a pretty good player, but that's a problem because they need him. You know, they don't have a lot of guys who are real difference makers, who are real problems, who are problems when you're facing a team like Ohio State. And at his healthiest and best, I think Jaden Reed is one of those, or at least close to it. And this passing game this week, you know, needs to have, you know, its best week ever. Because, frankly, they're going to have troubles on defense, big troubles, and they're not going to be able to run the football, though I do think that they need to, like, try to run the football. Attempts is more important than yards this week in some ways. But they need Reed to be a guy this week. They need him to be healthy enough to be a problem. And if he's not, they've really got no shot. Not that they have one.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I noticed in the Minnesota game, you know, he missed the Washington game, which was the first time in his career that he wasn't required to sit out, that he had to sit out because of an injury, because he had to sit out that whole season when he transferred from Western Michigan. The Broncos, if you haven't listened to this podcast and need to drink. But I do think that, you know, there was a deep pass sorry, a deep post. I think it was a deep post pass from Thorne to Reed. And those guys have multiple years of chemistry together. And people said, oh, man, Peyton Thorne missed Jaden Reed. He had him deep, wide open. But he's thrown to the spot where he thinks Jaden Reed can get to. I don't think Jaden Reed can get to that spot right now, which tells you a little bit. I think some of those things, and some of the guys on the offense talked about with Thorne, some of his issues might not necessarily be Peyton Thorne's issues. They might be receiver depth, timing, any number of things that, it falls back on the quarterback, but ultimately it could be something different. And I think that's the same with the Reed situation. I mean, they had that nice corner route for the touchdown, and you saw that in the Maryland game, and you're like, oh, there they are. There's that. But that was fleeting. And, you're right, Graham. This offense needs that because they need to have some big strike ability to match what the big strike ability Ohio State has.
You mentioned the touchdown versus Maryland. I guess if you're looking for positive signs from Michigan State, you have that. And the fact that for the first time this year, he was the team leader in targets with 13, unseating Keon Coleman for the first time this year. So if you want to look at that as a spin to, okay, maybe he's getting back to a point where maybe as close to 100% as he's been at any point this season. So I don't know if that's going to help against Ohio State, but something to look forward to, I guess, for the rest of the year.
Look, they need him healthy. I don't know where he is. He talked this week, which is something he was open about everything he went through, and they need him. He's got to be. They need him 100%.
Do you think we'll see him on punt and kick returns this week?
I mean, yeah. I think he was back on punt returns, but it's going to be interesting to see because they haven't really gotten anything. I think that's kind of you talk about hidden yards and hidden things. They haven't got much out of the kickoff return game with Jeremy Bernard and Jarek Broussard and now Terrell Henry. That's something that they need. I mean, Reed's a guy that can break it. And, I mean, if you're looking to win a game like this, you need some of those extra plays that Reed can provide you in the return game.
And Reed wants it. Like, he even said it. Like, and this is something people don't – they're always like, well, why would you put somebody back there if you get hurt? Like, you got to understand that Jaden Reed doesn't know what his NFL career is going to be. Like, to Jaden Reed, the returns are his money. If you take him off returns, you are messing with his wallet. And so, like, they do not – he wants to be back there. He even said it this week when they asked him about that. Somebody asked about the return that was called back and a shame that he had that touchdown return. And he said, yeah, well, it's on tape, though. And he's absolutely right. There's still value in it, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, if he can – he wants to be back there. This isn't – he's not saving himself for the passing game because – his shot at the NFL may be just as tied to that as it is as a receiver.
Do you think he wishes that he just would have stayed in the draft last year? And if he just ended up as an undrafted free agent somewhere, do you think he wonders about that?
I'm sure every guy wonders about it that doesn't go. And I think there are guys the other way that go, someone like an Edwin Baker, for example. I mean, he got drafted, but what was the longevity of his NFL career? I mean, he stayed another year.
Yeah, and Baker was an interesting guy because he had the misfortune of timing. Like, Baker had a he was in a situation where he wasn't necessarily going to be the guy, and so he left. And yet, the game has moved away. Nobody's the guy anymore. That's okay, but he was sort of in that middle zone where you still had featured running backs, and if you weren't, like, maybe you had to do something else. And I covered a guy, by the way, Western Michigan, Kalamazoo, by the way, is a drink if you want. A guy named Tony Scheffler, who played was an NFL tight end with the Broncos and Lions for quite a while and successful. And he applied for a sixth year at the end of the 2005 year and wanted it because it was a heavy tight end draft. Thought, I may need this to play in the NFL, and didn't get it. And wound up being a second-round pick and having a great career. And I remember talking to him about that early on. He just said, thank you, NCAA. Like, you never know. You can think you need the other year and you don't. And then you can have a situation where you're better off. And obviously with guys like Henderson and Reed, I mean, they did what they thought. I mean, they clearly knew they weren't high on NFL radars or they would have been gone.
I think you look at the situation with Jalen Naylor. I mean, You know, Naylor, interestingly, had his first catch last week, but he did it on a trick punt on special teams. I mean, you know, he wasn't catching the ball from Kirk Cousins in the offense. So that's also something that you keep in mind. Yeah, you get paid, but what's your role? Are you developing with where you want to be? You know, the difference between Naylor and Reed is the speed. You know, I think the speed and the durability, I think, the other way, because Naylor wasn't healthy throughout his MSU career and throughout his college career, but teams saw the speed, and, you know, you get drafted with speed alone. I don't think Reed has that kind of speed. I don't think he has that kind of breakaway ability, but, you know, he's a possession receiver, and where do those guys typically go in the draft? I mean, not all that high. So, you know, I do think, though, and it's just, I think, something Mel Tucker brings is they get a better, I think, more open and honest assessment by having a lot of the NFL guys around and scouts in and out of practice. So, you know, it's not like they're just guessing what they're seeing. They get a better glimpse in how guys work and things that they need to work on. So my guess is there may be a little bit of regret just simply because of the injuries, but I think he also has a clear enough head that he knows, he knew going into making that decision where his draft stock was a year ago.
Boy, I think we'd all kind of love to see a Michigan State team with Peyton Thorne, a quarterback, and a healthy Jaden Reed and a healthy Jalen Naylor for 12 games. I think the trajectory of this season is way different if those things happen. But let's move on to the Ohio State game here a little bit. So we all remember what Michael Penix did to Michigan State's pass defense. We all remember what Tanner Morgan did to a little bit of a lesser extent. Then we go back to last Saturday when Tagovailoa was 32 of 41 for 314 yards and a touchdown. Those are very good numbers for the younger Tagovailoa. And now we have C.J. Stroud coming into Spartan Stadium on Saturday afternoon, who as Michigan State fans will certainly remember just absolutely victimized the Spartan pass defense last year. Now, obviously, he doesn't have Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson this year because, you know, obviously those guys are first-round talents. Both of them have already had, you know, pretty good NFL moments here so early in the season. But it's Ohio State. They just reload. And I guess what's our worry factor about the secondary, maybe the Spartan defense in general, heading into Saturday? Graham, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a number of things. One is, you know, it's not just the passing game. This is a team that is got two very good backs and an offensive line determined to maul people this year. And, you know, they're without their best receiver and they got two more explosive guys. And obviously Stroud is going to be the number one pick and all that stuff. You know, it's an interesting week because you're not playing, you know, never are you playing for the shutout if you're the MSU defense, but you're playing a different kind of game. You're playing a rope-a-dope of sorts. You're playing trying to survive. And, you know, the man defense stuff, I don't know. You know, the third, all the bend but don't break stuff that fans hate, that's the plan. That's the play this week. And, you know, you may not like it, but understand that you're just trying to keep it in front of you. Make them drive the field and then have some third downs that are successful because, you know, I think Ohio State's at like 60% on the year on third down conversions. Michigan State's one of the worst, giving them up 44 in the Big Ten. I mean, they, you know, you just want to hang in there. Make them drive the field so, and then give your offense a chance and get off the field occasionally on third downs and understand your offense is going to have to put up 35 points. But that's okay. You just can't have a game where Ohio State picks the score. And that's what happens if you don't stop the run or the pass to any degree and you let people get behind you.
Yeah, that's easier said than done. I mean, you know, they had 500 yards of offense and 7 touchdowns a year ago. And Michigan State's offense couldn't get anything going, and at that point, you may as well just say that Kenneth Walker was out of that game because he got, I think, 6 touches and wasn't healthy. I mean, it was pretty clear his ankle was banged up in that game. But, you know, going back to Stroud, I mean, it's just, you know, the Ohio State machine doesn't skip a beat when you put replacement parts in there. I mean, they got Marvin Harrison's kid and Emeka Egbuka, who are combining for 11 touchdowns and I think 54 catches and nearly 1,000 yards already between them. So, and then they got Julian Fleming back from injury from earlier in the year. So you got 3 guys right there without even talking about the Big Ten's all-time single season receiving leader, Jackson Smith and Jigba, who's out, has been out with injuries. So, I mean, And it doesn't seem like he's going to play, but who knows at this point. I think they got a bye week next week, so they can just kind of rest him. But, you know, whether he's available will be interesting to see. And they got a tight end, you know, in Stover, who's making some big plays too. So, and that's just the passing game. I mean, like you mentioned, I mean, you know, what happens with Travion Henderson, I think, is going to be interesting. But, you know, Mayan Williams tore apart Rutgers last week. What I think is going to be really interesting to see too is last year Michigan State was in contention for a Big Ten title when they went to Columbus and got down 7 touchdowns out of the gate before halftime. Is Ryan Day going to keep that throttle going if they do that, if they're moving at will, or will he try and rest some guys, bring in some younger guys and more inexperienced guys earlier, knowing that it could be a situation where they can pick a score? I mean, quite honestly, you know, knowing they have a bye week the following week, that might be a play. So, I mean, it's just a tough matchup, because everything that Ohio State does well on both sides of the ball is where Michigan State struggles. And, you know, it's not a very favorable matchup at this time for Michigan State.
Yeah, if we recall, after week one, after Ohio State only beat Notre Dame 21-10, and really offense didn't look Ohio State-ish, and then there was talk, oh, maybe they're down this year, maybe down this year. Well, they put up 45 against Arkansas State, 77 against Toledo, 52 against Wisconsin, and then 49 last week against Rutgers. So that's just more supporting evidence of what you guys have been saying, that the Buckeye offense is humming.
But you know what? What's interesting about that is none of those teams, that's not exactly a murderer's row, and every one of those games is at home for Ohio State. This is their first road test. Notre Dame's obviously proven to be a far less of a threat on the national scope this year as thought of going into the year with Marcus Freeman. So, you know, what are we looking at with Ohio State? I mean, you know the talent's there from what you saw a year ago, but, you know, I do think that that's certainly one of those elements that could play. And again, you know, I still think that Ohio State's just playing at too much of a high of a level for Michigan State. But if you want to play devil's advocate and say, what could Michigan State do to win this game? That's one thing. You know, the potential for a hostile environment, maybe, if Ohio State fans don't overtake the Spartan Stadium. The potential to get on the board early and cause some adversity for a team that really hasn't faced much this year is another. But, you know, and I mean, there's the history of what's happened, you know, I think in 72, 74, and 98 when Michigan State was unranked. I mean, I saw a stat today that of 15 wins, I think 7 of Michigan State's wins over Ohio State were when the Buckeyes were ranked in the top 5. So I believe that was the number, but that's still, you know, Michigan State's in this series historically has always been able to punch up in some way, shape, or form. I don't know necessarily right now if they've got the horses to do it, but it's college football in 2022. Stranger things have happened.
Graham, do you expect a heavy Spartan, heavy and enthusiastic Spartan crowd at Spartan Stadium this week? Do you think they're up for this, or do you think they've been very bummed out by these Big Ten losses already, that and the loss to Washington, that it might not matter?
I don't think it'll be an enthusiastic crowd. I think just the number of people are trying to give away tickets, and you know, it's a good weekend to keep an eye on the TV or go to a bar and you know, where you got multiple games and beer in front of you. The thing that I think to possibly counter a little bit of the I think Michigan State would be better off in Columbus this week. Because Ohio State, you know, you're looking for dynamics that can help you. And one is that Ohio State is not yet, or Ohio State, none of these guys respect Michigan State, maybe, right? The last 2 years, they've just pummeled them. You know, if they played in the 2019 game, they would remember how that felt early. That was a little different. But, and the Ohio, Michigan State guys don't have a lot of confidence. And Mel Tucker talked about, you know, it starts with belief. And I'm not sure there's a lot of that there. However, so if this game was in Columbus and it was a 6th straight home game for Ohio State, just another ho-hum day, and you could see them like sleepwalking through it or not taking them seriously, but you get their first road game of the year. It's like a renewed focus. You're on the in the hotel together. It's different. You come out in an opposing team stadium. Like, they're just not going to not have, you know, that focus to them. I think it actually hurts Michigan State being home this week, just because you're looking for any potential edge that you could find, because what you don't have the players to match up with them. I mean, you know, if you look at the history of games where Michigan State has won, I just wrote about this and sort of looking historically on things you can draw from. And there have been a number of games where Michigan State's been a massive underdog and either performed above expectations and made it competitive, which I think most people would settle for, or won outright. There are very few that looked at all like this. And, you know, people talk about 98. Well, 98, that Michigan State team had as many pros as Ohio State did. They just underachieved. Yep,
they were a year away.
Yeah, and Rinaldo Hill, and I talked to him a few years ago, just said it. He said, we knew we were everybody as talented as they were. That, you know, that team had three first-round picks on it. I mean, that was different. They had the guys that Mel Tucker talks about. Mel Tucker was on that Michigan State staff as a GA. The guys that you need to be difference makers. You look at the 2016 game when they were like, 20-point dogs or whatever it was, and you know, lost 17-16. Well, that roster still had the remnants of, even though they lacked leadership and it was a dreadful year, still had the remnants of the 36-5 run. You had a better offensive line. You had the best of LJ Scott. And you didn't have an Ohio State team that was quite this electric, even if they were unbeaten. So there are a number of games you start to go through, and there's just nothing quite like this. There are the things you can draw from, but there's nothing quite like this, and nothing to suggest that this MSU team this year has a chance.
There was, you know, the talent, you know, that was year four of Saban in 98. So he had time to accumulate talent, and obviously that's been different, particularly because of the parameters with the pandemic and everything else that transpired, you know, the last few years for Tucker. So I think the talent is one thing, but when we talk about the stadium and the crowd, that's something I think when Tucker was hired and throughout, you know, the early part of last season when they started having success, that he talked about in terms of changing the culture. And it's not just the culture from the team and from in the product and on the field and everything. It's the culture and mindset of Michigan State fans to be more like Ohio State fans that are going to go and kind of do what they did in Seattle and overtake a stadium. But at the same point, do it at home, week in, week out. Be there regardless of what's going on. It's a challenge. It's a challenge that every coach has faced. You know, even Mark D'Antonio faced that. Think about some of those games, and some of it's the weather, some of it's, you know, the atmosphere, some of it's, you know, how the product has been presented over time by Michigan State, you know, whether it be restrictions on tailgating or whatever else. But it has to be an event. It has to be something that for 6 weeks in the fall, it's got to be appointment based on your calendar, and it's not there right now. And particularly when he's mentioned that the product is not there. They're not producing the product on the field to generate that. But from the fan base, I mean, all the hype and whatever nonsense people talk about winning a national championship in 5 years or whatever, nonsense propaganda that people want to put out there. If you don't have the bodies in the seats, if you don't have the fan base that's there, these are the moments where you need it. And that's a culture change. That's a culture shift that Mel Tucker is going to try and fight like every other coach before him. I don't know if they'll win it. You think of D'Antonio's teams, even the teams that went to the Rose Bowl, the team that went to the college football playoff, had games where they're, you know, by the third or fourth quarter, they weren't there. I think about that one Nebraska game. You know, the fans left. That's a culture thing. I mean, that's not anything a coach can do. That's got to be come from within the fan base.
But that's happening in the SEC. That happens at Alabama now. Frustrated. I mean, it's everywhere. And you know, I'll blame fans when they get a little more creative on commercial interruptions that take 4 minutes in the stadium and break after break. Like, at this point, college football doesn't have really a product that's marketable or watchable. We're just addicted to it. And until we get some new blood and new ideas and how to creatively create revenue and advertising in games that doesn't draw them out like that, I've got zero respect for anybody who wants more out of the fan base. To me, you are lucky people are there. You are lucky we're obsessed with this sport, because frankly, it is not an experience that anybody who came off an alien ship and was dropped into would find it all worthwhile.
You think about, too, I mean, you know, how much grief I get about not liking night games. who wants to sit at a night game, an 8 o'clock kickoff in early November, and then be there until midnight? I mean, that's what happened with that one Nebraska game. I mean, that's, you know, there, you got to understand that it's different. You know, you can't think, oh, well, we got to have primetime games. But that's, again, that's a monetary decision. That has nothing to do with the fan experience. There's a reason why those stadiums sometimes are empty at the end of those kind of cold games, you know, come the end of October and early November, particularly when the games, you know, the product's not that good. It's because of that reason, because they're chasing the dollars in the TV slots and letting TV dictate that. And, you know, that puts fans in a bad spot. I don't care how much tailgating you can have from, you know, sun up to sundown before a kickoff like that. Ultimately, if you're there for the football game, it's not a great product by the time you get to the third and fourth quarter and you're freezing your face off.
No, I had an aunt and uncle who were in town for the MSU game against Minnesota, and notably that was not a great game to sit through. But they left early, and I mean, I think it was, you know, my uncle was just, I mean, he's a football fan, he's a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, whatever. He was amazed by the delays and just how long you're sitting there. And they've got to work on, and I think, you know, Alan Haller, they've talked about, you know, beer in the stadium, and you know, they're trying to, you know, they got different sort of restaurants around, and they're trying to improve that experience. But when you make the choices right, as you said, Chris, to put TV first, it's always going to be you got to live with those consequences, especially when the TV experience just starts getting better and better.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and we're gonna be in the mid-50s for kickoff on Saturday. Well, I guess it'll depend on how sunny it is, or if it's just completely overcast. That might alter the mood of the fans, along with the halftime score. I mean, you guys have kind of hit on this, but it's just like, and I'm not delivering hot takes here. Like, you know, you're sitting through those 8 o'clock games in late November. If you're a top five team, it's a completely different thing. Whereas, like, if you're a middling 4-5 team, 4-7 team, yeah, you don't want to sit through that at all. But and then,
yeah, better question is what it's going to be like at 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Not so much a kickoff.
Yeah, on the way down from 55 degrees, if not already in the high 40s by the time that happens. And you guys are just kind of reiterating a lot of things you guys have already said. They're going to need Ohio State to pull like a Chiefs against the Colts in week three, when they made like four special teams mistakes and a costly personal foul penalty that gave the Colts another shot. Now, the Colts needed like 10 chances to finally win that game, but they got them. So, I mean, like Graham was saying, it feels like you just got to catch an Ohio State team just completely sleepwalking through the game, making a crazy amount of mistakes, and hope maybe you pip a couple points here and there. But we've seen it happen before. This is sports, right?
You gotta win turnovers, and that is, you know, that is something this team has not done yet. And there's no doubt. Like, to me, that is, you know, something they did well last year they haven't done yet. And, you know, these are college kids, and I know Ohio State got tested a little against Notre Dame, and that was closer than people expected. But if you can get a situation where things don't go right that have been going right, you never know how, you know, people will react. The problem is, you know, there's just not a lot of evidence that
no,
that's going to be on the MSU side of things.
Yeah, and going back to the Chiefs-Colts thing, I mean, the Colts got shut out by freaking Jacksonville the week before, then came back and beat the Chiefs at home. So again, we're just trying to grasp straws, trying to throw things. But yeah, like Graham, you were saying, there has been no imperial evidence through 10 halves of football, I think it is, so far this year, where it seems like Michigan State is going to win this game.
Yeah. No, I mean, if there were, you know, and they don't have, again, they don't have the people that make you, like, here's the thing, like, if they were really young, And this is where the transfer thing doesn't necessarily help you. But if you were really young in the defensive backfield, and you're starting a couple freshmen out there who, you know, these guys are promising players, but they've taken their lumps, and all of a sudden it comes together. You know, that's what happened in 98, right? With, you know, Cedric Henry and Ronaldo Hill. You get a couple guys out there and held up. And there's just not a lot of, on the defensive side of the ball that now they may get a little healthier, but that says, you know, this is going to ever be a lot different this year. And that, you know, obviously whenever they get Xavier Henderson back, if that were to happen, you know, that would be helpful. Jacob Slade would be, I think, very, very helpful against the run. But, you know, they just don't have, you know, they need their strength, their chance, not just this week. Because here's the thing about this week. Like this week, I think fans, they don't want to be humiliated. But this is not a week to judge MSU. Because basically, when you talk about the sort of the, we've talked about the parallel tracks of the program, what's happening now and then the recruiting for the future. The reason you paid Mel Tucker, the dream is to recruit with Ohio State. That's a couple years down the road. That's recruiting base. That's not now. You know that. It's all the other games that I think people are frustrating. But you want to try. You know, I think back to that 2016 Michigan game. It's 30-10 at halftime. Winds up being 32-23. And, you know, that was – Michigan didn't leave there with some sense of, oh, they retook over the rivalry. Michigan State wasn't embarrassed at all. They sort of kept their dignity, so to speak, in that, the way they fought at the end. And I think that's all MSU's fans are hoping for now. And I even think for the team, having a game where there was some success late, where they weren't completely annihilated, they'd walk out of there feeling pretty decent.
That 16 year was the one where they were 17-16 with Ohio State, right?
Same year, yep.
I mean, that team was competitive. This team hasn't shown that the past 3 weeks at all. At all. I mean, you know, they're giving up. I mean, they've given up, I think, 40, you know, however many points it's been. I mean, 108-19 to Ohio State the past year, 2 years. That's a lot to give up, 108-19 or whatever it is. And then you look at the last couple weeks. I mean, you know, Maryland beat them by 2 touchdowns. And, you know, they've lost these games big. I mean, it's just a different type of bad right now than it was in that 16 year. You know, it's kind of weird, but you're right. I do think that this, you mentioned the parallel tracks. I think that's kind of important. I mean, you need to understand that this is, and again, this is a game that, you know, I don't think anybody coming into the year thought, well, this Michigan State team can beat Ohio State after what happened last year, but they can be more competitive. That's, I think, you hate to say it. I think Peyton Thorne maybe said this after the game, that there are no more moral victories, but if there is one, you got to be competitive, period. You know, even if it's just for a half. You know, you can't have the same thing as last year and be down 7 touchdowns right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think this whole month, like obviously Wisconsin, and I don't think the firing of Paul Chris helps, but if that's the game you got to try and you got to win. But if even the Michigan game, and this is the work that's been done, this is when you've won 10 and 14 years, this is when you're 2-0 as Mel Tucker. Michigan's a better team than Michigan State by quite a bit right now. And that's another game where you just want to get out of there with your dignity. And there's nothing that the opposing team or the opposing fan at the water cooler can really say to you, because you've done such good work over the past couple years and past decade and a half. But if it's one of those things where it's just really ugly and it looks like the programs are in very, very, very different places, then it's tough. And I think even for Michigan State's players, if you get out of this month, it's hard to believe I'm saying this for this program given what they were hoping for at the beginning of this year. But if you get out of this month at 3-5, and if you've beaten Wisconsin and you haven't been obliterated beyond any, you know, to every degree by Ohio State and Michigan, you'll feel okay going into November that you've got a shot to find a way to get 3 wins and get to a postseason and you know, and have the year not feel like a disaster. And again, the year won't be a disaster regardless of what happens, as long as those kids who are committed, those 4-star kids, don't decommit. They can go 2-10.
Right.
And if he signs a class with 15 4-star kids, does not matter. That's a separate track. It's when this track messes with that track that you got a problem.
I think that was well said there, Graham. And that's hitting on a lot of things we talked about last week when it came to recruiting and, you know, not key. Maybe needing to keeping a few more of D'Antonio's guys to kind of fill out the depth chart a little bit. But, well, I think we've said everything we need to say about this game. Let's move on to our predictions for this week. I think we know where everyone is leaning. Chris, I'll start with you. What is your prediction and score?
Well, like I said earlier, the things that Ohio State does well really just kind of runs countercurrent to what we're seeing from this Michigan State team, what they don't do well. I mean, the pass defense has struggled. The offensive line has struggled. The run game has struggled. And, you know, those are areas that if you're going to compete in a game like this, I mean, you got to keep the ball, first of all, out of C.J. Stroud's hands, which when you rank 129th out of 131 teams in time of possession, that's not going to get it done. And when you rank 115th in pass defense, yards allowed, that's not going to get it done. So I still don't understand the spread all that much because I still think it's low based on what we've seen from these two programs this year. So I've got Ohio State winning this one 51-14.
Graham?
It's an interesting spread. I think MSU is getting some brand recognition here.
Before you continue, the spread according to DraftKings is 27. Go ahead.
27. Yeah, yeah. It's moved up a little bit, but not substantially. I mean, there must be some money coming in on MSU to keep it where it is, which I would not advise people to do. But again, there have been a number of games where people you just kind of assume that Michigan State's gonna. The spread is going to be, you know, covered by the team that's a heavy favorite against MSU, and historically that has not always been the case. And
some of it might be the injuries with Henderson and Jackson Smith and Jigba too.
Yeah, Henderson's supposed to be back this week, but you know we'll see. What is he 100%? What does that do? I'm kind of with Chris here. I think this game will get. I think Michigan State's going to. Probably struggle on both ends, and Ohio State is going to pretty much be able to pick the score. I would go somewhere, 48-14, something in that range. I think Ohio State covers.
I wonder if it's also because they brought that number down because of Rutgers last week. The Rutgers game last week was like 40+49, I think it was, and I bet on that. So thank you, Rutgers, for covering 49 points last week. But
here's the other thing, Phil. I mean, I think that there is, you know, Michigan State is not this isn't Iowa's offense.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things that can happen in these games, too, is you get a massive lead and Michigan State's trying to salvage something out of it and get something going, and you get a lot of backdoor stuff. You know, Michigan State's still, you know, trying to score points with some pretty talented players in the second half, and the game gets inside of 27, even if it was a blowout. So I can see lots of scenarios where MSU finds a way to cover this. I just it just doesn't feel like there's a recipe for it to be competitive.
Yeah, Grant, I will say that my score was basically almost the exact same as yours. I was going to say 49-14, and there's a part of me that thinks the Buckeyes are going to sleepwalk through a decent portion of this game. But like we said, we've seen Michigan State play 5 games now, and it might not, even if they're sleepwalking, it might not matter. But it is on my radar a little bit that the Buckeyes, there's a potential for them to kind of sleepwalk through this, because obviously it was different last year because they were both top five. Were they both in top five for last year's game? So there was no sleepwalking through that one, but we'll see what happens. You guys want to talk a little basketball before we sign off here? MSU Madness is Friday night at Breslin leading into the Ohio State game, and I should be okay crowds, I think, for both of those things, or for the men's and women's team. We'll see what happens there. And Chris, I know you wrote a story about the thinning roster about the team this year, but what are your kind of takeaways on the team as the season gets underway here? They've been in practice for a couple weeks now.
Well, I think the big thing, and I kind of talked about this a little bit in that story at freep.com, they've got basically right now 9 guys, so you don't even have ones versus twos right now in practice, and that changes a lot of the dynamics of what Izzo does, even in a practice setting, right? I mean, he has been known to just yank guys out for an entire practice if they're not performing. He's been known to yank guys out of games with a quick hook if they don't do the things that they're supposed to. That changes his perspective on some of this. You're not going to be able to. You don't have the 11th, 12th, 13th guy down the bench who can, you know, come in and maybe give you something at this point this season. So he's going to have to learn to live through some mistakes and let guys play through it. And it sounded like with Malik Hall, kind of what he said is, you know, guys are kind of liking that idea of, hey, you know, we know that if we aren't doing something right, that we got to fix it on the court. We can't just go sit on the bench and watch it, which is going to be a totally different dynamic for an Izzo team and really for him as a coach. And, you know, whether this is an experiment and it'll quickly swell back to the 13 full scholarship complement because he doesn't like that idea, you know, we'll see. But this is the hand they have right now. And, you know, they've got, like I said, until Jaden Akins get back, they got 9 scholarship bodies. And right now, Malik Hall is back from his toe injury, but, you know, he's limited. I saw him grimace at least once on a cut with it. But, you know, it's also early October versus, late October, early November. So he's got plenty of time to get back to 100%. And, you know, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering how much of a good look are these guys going to see in practice when it comes time to prepare for their opponents?
I'm looking forward to watching the season because I love the fact that there isn't as much depth and they're going to have to play guys a lot more minutes. And there's just a lot of intrigue with this roster. I think it's a decent roster. And the Jaden Reed thing, Jaden Akins deal is interesting because, you know, you've got a schedule that is as wicked as any that's ever been put together there. And, you know, I have a feeling he is not going to be back full go till just about the start of that. And then how are you working him in? Like, the dynamics of the team in November are going to be different than the dynamics of the team later. And yet you're playing some of your biggest and toughest games. And so I do think there's that could be a little bit problematic. Right now, I think, you know, Tyson Walker is pretty much playing off the ball. And they like what they see, and they know they can just move him back to the point guard as a backup when they need to. But so I think they are preparing to need to not rely on Akins at the very beginning, just as he works himself back in. So that's the interesting part of things. I think Midnight Madness is not something I usually go to, but I think it's a cool opportunity for people. I think it's a really cool thing that, you know, it's not like the old days. The old days, it was really cool when it was the beginning of practice. Like, you know, if you were a hoops junkie, at midnight they could roll out the balls and actually scrimmage, and there was something to that. That is fun. And now they've been practicing for a while, but I still think it's a cool thing. They do a nice job with it, and it's a great chance for people who don't often get over there for a lot of things. Tickets are expensive. It's hard to get, you know, the good full Michigan State basketball experience, and it's a chance to get something like that.
And the ability to work with the kids in the summer, that's new too. That changes some of this as well.
All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off here? I will say that if things go very poorly on Saturday, this might end up being a Michigan State volleyball/women's soccer podcast for next week's recording. But
I got nothing. I'll have more for you after Saturday.
All right. We'll look forward to your guys' post-game video discussion, which you will be able to find on LSJ.com and Freep.com. Talking Spartans. That's the name. I guess I should give it a proper plug, right?
Appreciate you, Phil.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Chris Solari, at Graham_Couch, at Phil_Friend, and LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.